Hi, this is Katie Kiefer from What Doesn't Kill You, Food Industry Insights, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, hey, you're listening to Eat Your Words on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kathy Irway. It's a good day today because we are talking with two editors of an awesome magazine. You may have heard of it. It's called Lucky Peach. But you may not have known that it is also the cookbook series. The Lucky Peach is now launching, and their first book in the series is called The Worst of Lucky Peach. They've also authored another cookbook that was the first cookbook from Lucky Peach, but we'll get into a little bit about the different series, but it is called 101 Easy Asian Recipes. So basically, I have a couple of brilliant editors on the line. They're in San Fran, and it is co-founder and editor-in-chief Chris Yang. Hi.
Hello.
Hello, and we also have editor Rachel Kong, awesome, brilliant chick.
Hi.
Hi. how's the sound over there? Is it okay for you guys? Sorry.
Yeah, great. Sounds okay.
All right,
yeah.
Sorry. I was just joshing them before about how it only mattered if I could hear them, but I just want to make sure that you could also hear each other. That's also good. So congrats on The Worst of Lucky Peach. But before we get into sort of the nitty-gritty about the sausage lore that you've compiled here with this volume, let's talk a little bit about Lucky Peach as a whole and what you're trying to do with these cookbooks. Whose idea was this, by the way, this cookbook series?
I think that from the very beginning, since Peter and Dave Chang and myself, Peter Meehan, and had started talking about Lucky Peach as a thing, cookbooks had been on our radar, and the 101 Easy Asian Recipes book was a joke that Peter and Dave were talking about long before Lucky Peach was a magazine. They thought they would make this cookbook called 101 Easy Asian Recipes, and it would be just completely full of really difficult, impossible to recreate recipes, just sort of lampooning that idea of, you know, home cookbooks. Fast forward 5 years, and we realized that's not really a joke, that people have to actually cook at home, and that we had published enough sort of impossible recipes in the magazine. So, the cookbooks are sort of our way of kind of growing up a little bit and helping people put food on the table.
That's hilarious about how it started. And, I'm intrigued that you guys have always been talking about cookbooks because, you know, Lucky Peach has been such a great success. You guys have been nominated for so many James Beard Awards, even up to this year. You guys are doing gangbusters and kind of proving a format that was once thought to be, like, sort of impossible, the whole quarterly print magazine, shall we say, going against the odds and making massive success with that and reaching a lot of people. So cookbooks have always been on the map then.
Yeah. I think that we all sort of share the same affection for the printed word and these objects. And Rachel and I both put our time in at McSweeney's where, mm-hmm. you know, there's nothing more cherished than publications that not that many people necessarily want. So that's in our blood.
That's pretty fun. So, you guys seem to have a really, subversive view on and different, well, maybe not subversive always, but just, let's say, different, unconventional take on a lot of the kind of conventions of food writing. Things are... I guess, I don't know, how would you describe the attitude of Lucky Peach? Maybe I'm butchering it. Let's hear it from you guys.
Yeah, I think that attitude is kind of a word that comes up a lot. It's mm-hmm. more just that I don't think we're reacting to anything really. We're just sort of following our interests in terms of, you know, like what we like to read, what kind of recipes we like to cook, and we just like to be, you know, both entertained and... Mm-hmm. Just to learn something, you know, when we're reading any kind of book, including cookbooks. And so that's sort of, that's where we're coming from. I don't know if it's an attitude. Maybe it is.
Rachel's got a real bad attitude.
I have a really horrible attitude. I'm like always screaming in the office and like
she wrote her motorcycle
throwing stuff
straight into the office.
I can just see it. Yeah. Those offices must be nuts.
Yeah.
No, but it's fun to see that kind of carry into the choices you make with the cookbooks, with the, you know, easy Asian recipes, for example. And in the first book in the series, you know, it's not like a sausage encyclopedia. It's called The Worst of Lucky Peach. But it sounds like, Chris, this was your idea to do Worst or Sausage?
Yeah, so when we first started talking about the book series as a group, you know, we had, like, the River Cottage series and the Time Life books in our heads. And we knew we kind of wanted to do a few of these, a series of these books that would be, you know, a little bit hyper-focused, but also done in our sort of idiosyncratic way where it's focused, but, you know, we're kind of bouncing around to whatever interests us. So that was what these books were going to be, and we had to decide what the first subject would take on, the first book would take on, and that pun, the worst, or the worst of
worst,
like, just really sealed the deal, you know. Like, I think that coming out the gate, a book about sausages might seem a little bit hyper-specific. You know, we're not like a sausage trade magazine, but that pun really—I don't know.
We might be.
Yeah, I don't know. We really tapped into like a real sausage underground, I think.
But it's not all German sausages or wursts. It's a fun little global map of sausages. Or how would you describe it like that? Because you have what did you describe it as? The sausage quest. You say the bulk of this book's exploration comes in the form of a curated atlas we call the Sausage Quest. It's divided into six geographic regions from which a selected group of sausages with no rhyme or reason other than they tickled our fancy.
Yeah, that's basically the deal. The book is basically split in half between this sausage quest, which we've gathered writers from all around the world to talk about their local tube steaks. And, you know, like I said in the introduction, there's not really, it's not a comprehensive book. It's not every sausage under the sun. It's the ones that were interesting.
Well, how could you? Yeah.
Yeah. There are so many sausages, really, any culture that
I'd like to see heard. Somebody attempt to do that. I mean, yeah.
Right. It would not be me. And the other half of the book is, you know, these long form essays and fun little rants and then recipes.
Mm-hmm. It is a curated, let's say, collection of sausages. And they're all really fun. I mean, I think that this book, more so than anything, rather than like some scholarly academic encyclopedia, is just full of, you know, joy and just a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's what we're trying to do for sure. Like, the joy is exactly right. And that's the approach we really take with everything, is this sort of sense of informed wonderment. You know, we're like wide-eyed, but we know a few things.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we sort of know our limitations, too. Like, we know that we're not going to be that super OCD type A. Like, every sausage in the world, you will not be able to find fault with this book. Like, I think that we're more
you're
about...
You're not going to be mad if I bring up a type of sausage that you don't know about?
Oh my God. Chris doesn't want to hear about it.
I can't wait.
What's the sausage?
Big little... Oh, wait. Big sausage eats little sausage in Taiwan. It's like a rice, sticky rice stuff.
Oh, my friend, that is in the book in a big way.
Sweet. Okay.
It's in there.
Never mind, sorry.
We were about to send it back. Pull the copies off the shelf.
Oh.
That's an amazing sausage, though, where it's just like a full grammatical sentence is the name of the sausage. One big sticky rice sausage enveloping its little partner.
I'm so glad. Okay. Well, you know, there's a lot of sausages in here. I can't eat them all or make all the recipes. anyway, no, but I love that you bring up the Time Life cookbook series because, you know, like you mentioned, you know, you're not taking yourselves too seriously, but those were very, really cool. And so basically, if we can, because I have a few, you know, I like to collect old cookbooks, but basically those were a series from the same publisher. So it had like some sort of formatting that were similar and they had a cohesive feel to it. that delved into different cuisines of the world. There's something to be said for that. I see like more folks doing that. I see Phaidon doing that a little bit with their global cookbooks. And do you think that that's sort of making a comeback? Do you see that there's a real need for that today?
I'm not an expert on what people need, as anyone who has seen my body of work would know. I think that those Fide and Phaidon books are really comprehensive and interesting. I think it's a little bit of a different purpose, you know, like all of those Time Life books were not super thick and not really comprehensive. They were like the cuisine of Italy as we know it right now.
Yeah.
Like, as far as what our editors know.
But it was trying. It was earnest, though.
Yeah, it was earnest. It was definitely earnest, and it was reflected, you know, the knowledge of the time and what people knew from in a less traveled world, a less sort of, you know, pre-internet world. But, you know, what really drew me, at least, is, you know, when I was a kid, I had a set of encyclopedias, and books came in these big sets, and you could... any topic you wanted to cover or learn about, you could pull a book off of the shelf, and you knew, you know, you had a book about that. So it was a cool thing to me to have these references that came in multiple volumes, and that's what really
improved
the idea.
It's a fun collection, and so maybe like it's interesting though. You mentioned like in retrospect, looking back at those series, it's kind of, you know. It's maybe a little narrow in scope, but yeah.
I think it's not necessarily narrow. I mean, it's very of a time, and I feel like to think that you're making something that is not of your time is kind of insane. And so, you know, that's what we're doing too. Like, not that we're trying to say like this is sausage. These are sausages right now in the world, but we sort of are as well. You know, just like this is. This is like what we know at the moment. Chris came up with the subtitle for the egg book, so it's called All About Eggs, and the subtitle is Everything We Know About the World's Most Important Food. So, like, everything we know is not everything.
Nice, yeah. So that's the next one in the series. It's eggs. Is that
yeah.
the topic? Cool. I'm so excited for that book.
And if you buy both books, you can line them up on the shelf, and there will be a little egg that lines up with Chris's little sausage on his spine.
Oh, my God. That's so fun. Cool. So when is that one coming out? I'm so excited for that one. I really... can't wait to I think I contributed a couple
recipes. Kathy is also a contributor. Disclosure,
I can't remember what I
that's coming out in spring 2017, so about a year from now.
All right, cool. What can you spill? What are the next Lucky Peach cookbook topics, or do you know?
So the very next book will be not part of this exact series, but will be sort of a cousin of 101 Easy Asian Recipes, and it will be called Power Vegetables.
Wow.
At the end. Maybe I didn't say that powerfully enough. Power Vegetables.
And that's another Power Vegetables.
That Peter will be spearheading. So all vegetarian recipes, all vegetable recipes, all ways of making vegetables more powerful or demonstrating their power.
Yep.
And their power in, like, you know, maybe even replacing meat in your diet.
Yep. That's so exciting. And I'm laughing not like so much at I don't know the concept, but it's because I do see like so many cookbooks come out with that theme, so I love that you're kind of like doing your own take on it. That should be really fun. Let's talk more about the worst of Lucky Peach, but we're going to cut to a quick little commercial interlude and be right back.
Thank you.
All right, we're back chatting more with Chris Ying and Rachel Kong, editors of Lucky Peach. And they have a new cookbook out called The Worst of Lucky Peach, subtitled A Treasury of Encased Meat. So congrats, guys. Let's talk about sausage for a second, because I feel like it's gotten a bad rap. And it's hard to even, like, just say the words without, like, coming up with, like, or all these jokes coming to mind and euphemisms, let's say, for sausage-based humor, sausage party, so forth, you know. Maybe that's part of it, but I also think that, you know, just in terms of what's on the typical American dinner and, you know, glossy food magazine recipes, we're not seeing as much sausage maybe as in other days, and it tends to be a lot of, let's say, you know, boneless chicken breast. So do you think there's a little revival, or are you trying to revive popularity in sausage, or
well, sausage? I mean, you know, the jokes are part of the draw for us. We really lean into that sausage humor as much as possible. I don't think you know, we're not scared of its resemblance to other things. But, no, I mean, the thing is, like, once I thought the same thing as you. I sort of thought, okay, well, like, sausage is a pretty narrow food
literally
topic.
Literally narrow.
It's a little bit of a weird thing to dive deep on. And then we started doing the book, and I just realized that sausage is really everywhere. It's so pervasive in American food culture. Everywhere you go, there's sausage. And you know, there's all sorts of sort of connotations tied to it, but the fact of the matter is Americans love sausages and hot dogs.
Yeah.
And, you know, just along the lines of making a book because we love making jokes about it and puns, you know, sometimes we come up with a headline and then are like, let's figure out an article to go with this absurd headline. Just kidding, we don't do that.
We definitely do that.
This is a manifesto for a new generation of sausage eating. I get it. Okay, so, but this is like, I love that, you know, you describe that it's universal. You know, you really show that everybody from around the world has been making sausage because it's practical.
And delicious.
And delicious. And various. You know, do you think that in this book, I mean, do you have to have casing? Is that your part of your definition, like a natural animal intestine casing? Do you think that's the definition of a sausage?
No.
Or part of it?
So for this book, we stuck to fresh sausages. That was our sort of only boundary. We didn't dig into salumi and charcuterie. We think that would be too big of a world to try.
That's another world, yeah.
Yeah, so, but no, like fresh sausage is basically ones that require refrigeration, that are made with fresh meat, and we cheated a little bit here and there, but no, casings are definitely not a part of it.
Really?
You know? No, there's a, you know, Robert Sietsema talks about this sausage called Zivapi, which is a caseless sausage, and then, you know, chorizo is largely bought in bulk, and that's a big sausage that lots of us know about.
So what makes it sausage then? I mean, what makes meatloaf not sausage? Like, what is the definition or unifying thing about sausage that makes it sausage? The fresh ones.
Well, so like I guess the most primal definition of sausage or the name sausage has to do with salt. Mm. So meat that's being kind of the life is being extended a little bit through with salt. You know, and so that can basically range from anything where you're kind of salting the meat and seasoning it. Just like the sort of leftover off bits and making it last for a couple of extra days to, you know, salumi and charcuterie, which you're salting and hanging and preserving for years and years. So that's the basic idea of sausage.
Gotcha. All right. So in this book, you travel around to Europe, Africa, Asia, Australia, North America, South America on your sausage quests. Did you find, did you start looking around the globe and trying to get a sausage everywhere? Or, like, I'm curious, where do they not eat sausages? Like, is there any place that you know of that just doesn't have it in their culture or had it?
they're not huge in Antarctica, I guess. No, sausages are basically everywhere. Because most sausages are sort of pork-based, you find them a little bit less in Muslim countries. But that's not even entirely true.
No, you can have lamb sausage, yeah.
Yeah, you have lamb sausages and beef sausages. I guess at the end of the day, we didn't find that many sausages in Australia.
Oh, weird.
Not endemic sausages in Australia. I think they like sausages fine. I mean, I've eaten a lot of sausages in Australia, but there's only so many sort of sausages of Australian origin.
We're going to get an angry native Australian sausage maker.
They don't even get that angry. They're so nice.
That's interesting. Okay, what is both of you guys' favorite sausage right now?
Whoa.
Rachel loves the Danger Dog.
The Danger Dog. That's like the bacon-wrapped hot dog that you find it in San Francisco, I think also L.A. a little bit, and then it's, you know, from Tijuana, or something, but it's like a hot dog that you get with, like, sweet peppers and onions and, like, cooked to death, really caramelized, and you eat it when you're three sheets to the wind, or maybe
and the
five.
The danger comes from both the position that you're in when you're eating it, also
yeah.
the fact that they're usually cooked under less than stellar hygienic circumstances.
Yeah, on the street. But, you know, that's not important in the moment.
This is a new one for me. It's ketchup, mustard, mayo, sometimes Thousand Island dressing, and, and all that bacon and all that kind of... It sounds like a really messy dog, too.
Not as messy as you are in the moment.
Okay, I can imagine. What about you, Chris?
I guess right now my sausage of choice, during the course of this book I did sort of this lap through Bangkok and through Singapore kind of on the sausage trail, and in Bangkok and throughout Thailand they have these sort of Isan sausages, which maybe people know from eating at Thai restaurants, but they're these little, you know, sort of crimson orbs, and you'll see them hanging in these kind of strings of pearls all over the street side, drying and curing, and they're like a little bit sour from fermentation, and you know, you get them grilled and you sort of pierce them with like the pointy end of a Thai bird chili, and then wrap it up with some herbs and a little piece of ginger and peanut, and it's a pretty remarkable thing.
So
the nice thing about this whole book is that, like, I really like sausages to begin with. So it's not a thing that we're sort of just forcing ourselves to study. Like, I will really eat sausages in whenever they're on the menu.
I mean, each of our magazines has a single theme, and so this was a way to even get more specific with things that we love.
I love that you guys included, like, notes from your little European trip here that you took around. In Germany, you know, there's quotes from all you guys trying stuff. What have you guys got against Weisswurst? Somebody says...
I have nothing against Weisswurst.
Okay.
I'm a fan of Weisswurst.
Who is this WC that said, it looks like white cat poop?
That's our founding art director, Walter Green. So that trip we took was pretty funny. It was, you know, I knew that I wanted to go through Austria and Germany and, you know, the Alsace region of France to kind of look at sausages.
Mm-hmm.
And, I wanted to go with a couple of different people. So I brought this guy, this writer, Gideon Lewis Krauss, who, you know, has quite a bit of experience living and working in Germany. He did a Fulbright scholarship in Berlin. And then I wanted to kind of counter his presence with Walter, who was at the time, I think, 24 and had never been to Europe before and kind of bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. So, we went and had some Weisswurst, and neither of them really liked it.
Really?
And Walter thought it looked like white cat poop. So, we got a real mixed bag in this book.
Which I don't feel isn't accurate.
Yeah, well, it's one of those luxury sausages, though, right? I mean, you have to... Isn't there something about, like, you have to only have it in the morning because it's so fresh that it, like, will go bad otherwise?
Yeah, there's, like, a tradition of eating it before the noon church bell strike, but that was sort of more of a you know, a relic of a time when you had to be like a little bit, there was no refrigeration in the morning. And then the current tradition is still to serve them in this, you know, tureen of their own
broth,
poaching water, sort of lukewarm. And they still eat them in the mornings. And it's confusing a little bit to me because it's sort of like, why don't you just heat them up more? And then they won't be eaten. But I don't know. Seems like that's just the way they like it.
That is the way. Yeah, it is interesting though that they're so white, and then there's no browning on them, unlike other sausages. So it does look kind of really. It stands out like a.
No, and they're like they're. You're not supposed to eat the casing. Most people sort of peel
yes,
the casing
that's
off.
Right.
There's also like a way of eating them called, I think, Zuzelning, which you kind of clip the ends off, sort of like a. You clip the end off like a cigar, and then you.
Yeah.
Suck the sausage meat. out of it, which we thought was just like a, we had an intern sort of set us up with this research document ahead of time, and we thought maybe he was just sort of having a laugh at our expense, but it seems to be real, actually.
I love that, you know, you. If I were, like, going to, you know, imagine a sausage book written by anyone else, I probably wouldn't put Coney Island Dirty Water Dog in it, but you have that. Oh no, you have a Coney Island dog and then the Dirty Water dog, and then we have the Chicago dog. You know, this is not just your Merguez and your fancy Andouille and, you know, whatever. So,
no, those are for sure. Those are the Dirty Water dog has value. Peter Meehan, who are one of our editors, wrote sort of this screed against the Dirty Water dog, saying, that it was gross and not worth your time. And then we got a letter from, I think, like a 6-year-old reader of the magazine saying, you know, I like your magazine, but I disagree with that article, which we published in his handwriting at a full page. So,
what is so good about the Dirty Water Dog then? Did you come around to, or I don't know if Peter, if that's just Peter's thing, or do you guys
Peter
like
did
it
not
now?
Come around on the Dirty Water Dog in spite of the cuteness of it. letter to the editor.
His cold heart wouldn't allow it.
But you guys support it? You think it's a good thing? Dirty Water Dog?
I'm not a huge fan of it. Again, like I'm not super big into hot dogs held at, you know, room temperature for days at a time.
Again, the vice versa issue. Or not days at a time, but like in that water or something.
Right.
That's funny. Well, I guess it's a presence, so we have it in the book. I appreciate that. So this is so much fun. Can we have any, like, teasers about the next, I don't know, the egg book? Anything, you know, like, we can look forward to seeing? Will it be similar, like,
global? In
terms
of the egg book, it's, well... It will be also in a similar format, you know, not a quest, but part recipes and then part longer pieces and shorter infographics and sort of fun facts. And hopefully, you know, you'll learn something that you didn't know about.
What's the craziest?
World's most important food.
So, yeah, I know. What is, I mean, there's so many crazy egg dishes out there. Any like, teaser of, like, the grossest or craziest you can think of? Hopefully it's not my contribution.
Well, Kathy Irway turned in a disgusting omelet. No, everything is, I, you know, also, like Chris, just really, I love eggs and love eating eggs, and this is sort of a way to squeeze in as many delicious egg recipes as possible. I just kind of, I really love everything. You know, we have 1,000-year eggs in there, and so I think maybe not everybody is in love with those, but I really love them. You know, like a few maybe more controversial ones are like in utero eggs, so just the eggs that are already, that are inside the chicken and have not come into the world yet.
That's a tricky one. I just had this weird like vision of what would a dirty water egg be like? And then anyway, so glad to hear that there's some creative ones coming up. So thanks, guys, so much. I guess that's about all the time we have for today, but we'll definitely be checking out Lucky Peach, The Worst of Lucky Peach, and looking forward to the rest of the series.
Thanks so much for having
thank
us.
You.
Thanks so much, guys. We'll see you next week on Eat Your Words.
I like the way you do. Whoa, the way you took it so slow. And I've been so satisfied.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
That I ain't never had no loving like this before.